Welcome, everybody, to Great American Golf. Ray Adams here, your caddy for the show. We've got an hour that is a very, very special edition with a very special guest. And I'm going to introduce that guest in just a moment with the help of Dr. Bob Denny, PGA historian emeritus for the PGA of America. And yes, folks, you're hearing a little bit of allergies going on out here in my throat in Phoenix, Arizona, in a plus 90 degree temperature. Everybody from all over the world comes to Phoenix during the winter. Folks are loving the hot temperatures. Not so many over here in my house. We like the 70s better, but hopefully we'll get back to that soon. For February in the 90s, well, it's definitely golf time, and there's golfers everywhere on every course. You can't get a tee time, and you can't get into a restaurant. We love that. Keep bringing your money. We love those snowbirds. So thank you so much for joining today, everybody. We're on the Golf News Net. 1.5 million people go to golfnewsnet.com every single month, and even more now, it's growing, to get their golf news, to get their golf radio shows, their TV shows. I put this radio show and my sister show, Monday Golf Lifestyle Show, over on the Golf News Net. They stay there for a couple days, and then they head over to all the big platforms like Amazon and Apple and Spotify, iHeart, Pandora, all the places that you like to listen to your radio. And on television, you go over to Amazon and Apple and Roku and all the other places you like to listen and see your favorite TV shows. So everything is streaming, and I'm excited that you're with me, and I'm excited for this very special edition. Well, we do have the Cognizant Classic going on. That's the old Honda Classic going on. We'll talk about that a little bit later, and we'll cover a few other little quick things a little bit later. But right now, I want to get to why this show is such a special show, why it's a special edition. And I'm hoping that you're going to stay with me the full hour. We have one of, I think, the greatest guests we've ever had on the show. But he's been on this show before. Yes, I'm talking about Bob Toski, one of the great, great golf coaches in the history of the game. Bob is there, and I'm going to let Dr. Bob Denny introduce him formally. Go ahead, Dr. Bob.
Well, it's my pleasure to introduce a gentleman who is a young 99, as young as you can imagine, a person who's just a wonderful inspiration to all golf professionals everywhere and to golfers everywhere. He is a member of the PGA Hall of Fame. He's the first living inductee into the World Golf Teachers Hall of Fame. Once again, the first living inductee, because that goes back hundreds of years in our game history. He's a five-time winner on the PGA Tour. He is the last known winner that I know of who won in Havana, Cuba, in the Havana Invitational. And he is a gentleman who has coached some of the greatest players in the game, including Judy Rankin, Tom Kite, Bruce Crampton. I know I'm missing many others. He's been a color commentator and on Hughes Sports Network in the past. He's played on the Senior PGA Tour. He's played in three Masters, and he has played in the PGA Championship, the U.S. Open, and he just basically brings a great spirit to any type of discussion about the state of the game. My pleasure to introduce Bob Toski.
Thank you.
What a great introduction, Dr. Bob. Thank you so much for that. You covered everything and nothing in that you covered the highlights. Thank you so much. But when you look at a life lived of nearly 100 years, all I can say is I want to be like you, Bob Toski, when I grow up. Clear-headed.
Well, you got to understand what it takes at 99 to stay healthy.
Okay, let's start with that. But I want to say one more thing to surprise you. You have been on this show before. And the reason why I tell you that is because at the PGA Merchandise Show, a number of years back, I met you. And you were very, I interviewed Lee Trevino that day. And someone said, Bob Toski is here. And boy, did my team and I turn around and we went running everywhere. And this last PGA merchandise show a few weeks ago was my 22nd year. Now, I don't remember which year it was that I interviewed you. It was a number of years ago. Call it 8 to 10 years ago, probably 10 years ago, maybe 11. And you were there. You were very gracious, which Trevino was as well. You were so kind to stop and give me your time. I did a recorded interview. I still have that recorded interview on file. It aired and played on this show. And I don't remember what all we talked about, but we certainly talked about you and we talked about golf and we talked about your teaching method and style. And it was so fun to get to meet you then. Now, all these years later, here we are again. And let's start where you mentioned, what does it take to get to be nearly 100? You're 99 now. You're going to be 100 when?
September 18th.
September the 18th. Well, that is my mother's birthday month as well, and I'm October the 3rd. What does it take, Bob, to become your age? What do people need to know?
I think that, of course, my father lived to be almost 90, and he passed away in a normal fashion. But the thing that I think that we're coming to in this world is anxiety, a lot of tension, a lot of stress because of technology. And I miss the simple life back in Northampton, Mass, where I was raised in the countryside. It was just country folks, and we had a garden, we had vegetables, we had a simple way of eating, and now you've got the Dunkin' Donuts, you've got all kinds of pastas, and it's all changed, you know that. But eliminate stress, eliminate anxiety. Yeah, that's the thing that's a killer. And of course, there's so much stress today because of the type of living that we're in. Everybody's trying to succeed and have a good life, and of course that takes money and takes pressure, and I've lived through that. I went broke twice on the tour and survived by having people send me money and pay them back. Otherwise, I would have never stayed on tour. So I know what stress and anxiety is. I went through it, and today I'm happy. I'm relaxed. You can see that on TV here. I've been
I
through all
can.
that.
I can. You look, by the way, you look, folks, Bob Toski looks great. I mean, you look like you don't look a day over 99 and a half. You just don't. No, I'm teasing. No, but Bob looks like he's in his maybe late 70s, early 80s, and here he is going to be, here going to be 100. Unbelievable. You know,
Everybody
Bob,
tells me that, but
it's true. You
I
do look
appreciate it.
about, you do look that age, and you have great genetics, of course, and you know, you got that from your family, but you also figured out how to move. How do you live through the anxiety and the stress? What should we do? I mean, there's no more stress than being on the PGA Tour. It's a grind. And then you're saying you went broke twice. You had to ask money of people. Then you knew you had to pay it back. So you were under the gun to win. And the purses, of course, in those days were pennies compared to now. Although they were what they were for their time. But
Yes.
still, Bob, how do you cope with the stress? How do these guys cope with it week in and week out on the tour as they are now? Or is the money so big they
Well,
really don't have it?
in my case, you better believe in something higher than you. And every time I was in a position as playing on tour, and I had an anxiety, I always looked up to where the maker was, and I said, Dear Lord, help me by thy grace.
So
Help
you're a
me
man
by
of
thy
faith.
gift.
You're a man of faith.
And, I was an altar boy. I sang in a choir. A damn quick as you open to the ma'am. I know the Latin mass as an older boy. But you have to believe in something, and you have to believe in something higher than you. And you have to reach out for that strength.
Well,
otherwise,
we totally agree.
You can't find it there. You better find it someplace else.
Well, I share that as a person of faith. I know Dr. Bob as well. And so many of the tour players that I meet and that I've interviewed for both radio and TV over the years have a great faith in God above. And they've talked about it. They're open about it on this show. They've talked openly about it on my television show. And they do. And we are appreciative of that. I remember the first time somebody started talking about Jesus and the cross and being saved by Jesus because of him dying on the cross and rising again. It was on my TV show. And I thought, oh my gosh, Fox Sports is going to cancel my show because they had picked up my television show. This was 16 years ago. I'm in my 16th season on television, Bob, and I don't know how I'm going to get to you. Boy, I sure would love to sit down with my camera crew and have you be on my TV show. Maybe we can work that out. But I thought I was going
to
I, I thought I'd be canceled, but you know what? No one said a word. The show went right on, and over and over and over again over the years, many of the players talked about their faith, and the show continues to air with players who here and there will talk about their faith. Now, I know that Dr. Bob Denny is right here waiting, and he's got a couple of questions for you. I've got a slew of them, but we have started this out, I think, in such a great way about how to live to 99 and avoid the stress and anxiety and the chemicals in our food, as well as looking up to our faith. Dr. Bob, I'll let you take over from here for now.
Well, one thing is Bob has got a tremendous discipline about his life. And I take that because the man's waistline looks very similar to when he was playing golf in his prime. And that, and he's doing things right. And that's important. But what I'm going to go to, Bob, is when we talk about the word stress and anxiety, there's got to be more in stress and anxiety now among those people who are trying to run local golf tournaments based upon what's coming down the pike, what's happening to contracting the tour. I just wondered what your observations from where you're sitting of the state of the game as we see it.
Well, it's kind of become a carnival. If you look to the Phoenix Open and you see the stands on the 18th green, yes, go ahead, Ray.
No, no, no. I'm raising my hand to say I know the Phoenix Open. I've been going since I was five.
Well,
go right ahead.
Well, let's take the Masters, for instance. I played it three times and didn't play as well as I wanted to, but that's beside the point. You don't see any stands at the Masters. Everybody walks. And golf was all, when back in the 50s, everybody walked. There weren't any stands. Right now, they build all these stands for people to sit there and buy drinks and have food, and it's all about money. So,
yes, it is.
Yeah, it's another way of trying to entertain people that are watching golf. And I'll tell you a story that you get a kick out of about people. I'm playing with Lloyd Mangrum in this tournament, and he's driven the ball in a rough, and mine was in a fairway. And I strike it on the green. He strikes his ball on the green out of the rough. And he runs over to me in the middle of the fairway, and he said, "Bob, I was getting ready to hit my second shot, and there were two ladies talking to each other very close to me. There were no ropes. And one lady said, who's that young man playing with Lloyd Mangrum? And the other lady said, it's Bob Sosky. And the other lady said, let's go get a hot dog.
Let's go get a hot dog. So they didn't know who you were at the time, I guess, or whatever.
Well, Lloyd said, you're now a hot dog.
Now you're a hot dog. You're a hot dog. When you were on tour, Bob, all the players have nicknames on tour. Did you have a nickname when you were playing on tour?
I had a few of them, but the best one was Sam.
Sam
called me Mouse. Sam called me Mouse, Mighty Mouse.
He called you my Sam
And I said,
Snead
"What do
called
you
you
call
Mighty
me?"
Mouse.
Yes.
Isn't that great?
I said,
Okay, Bob.
I
What do you call
think
me?
it's great that Bob Toski can sit here now and tell us some of the people in history that he's rubbed shoulders with, which would amaze us. Bob, can you recall some of those greats you rubbed shoulders with?
You better believe it. How about Byron Nelson? How about Gene Sarazen? How about Henry Cotton? How about Peter Thompson? I could go on and on. Oh, how about Walter Hagen? I met Walter Hagen. Would you believe that? I met Walter Hagen. I met him in Detroit. He tapped me on the shoulder and said hello. So how far back can I go?
How about Babe Zaharias?
I met Babe. She played an exhibition at Northampton Country Club with Gene Sarazen, and I met the Babe there. And she says on the first tee, she said, "I'm going to loosen my girdle and let it fly."
Isn't that unbelievable? Wow.
And the great Mickey Wright, Bob. How would you classify that
Oh
lady?
yes,
Yeah.
Mickey Wright and I were pen pals. I wanted to have an interview with her. She would not allow me to have one, but she says, "I'd be happy to talk with you and talk golf." And we did, and we became pen pals. And I consider her probably the one of the greatest, if not the greatest, golfers ever lived.
Isn't that amazing? Go ahead, Bob.
I just want to ask, Bob, we were looking to statistics in last week's show, and one of the statistics that Ray brought to our attention was the decline of the expertise in today's PGA Tour players in putting. I'm just that just that category, putting, Bob. And
Oh.
I just wonder what you could take a look at
Well,
it.
you just came up with a big one there. I spent about 4 hours on watching TV and watching the players putt on a specific hole. And 90% of the players that putted missed the ball below the hole. Never above the hole, below the hole. And I told this to Chamblee, and he put it on the air because I did my homework. So if you're gonna miss a putt, which would you want to miss it on, a high side or a low side? The high side. And here's what's happened in golf. The greens are tw twice as big as they used to be, twice as large, right? And they're undulating. They have slopes. And the putting surface now is what, up to 12 or 13? When I played on the tour, it was nine. If the greens were slow, they were small. They were flat, and you could wrap the ball past the hole. It would stop only an inch or 2 inches or a foot past the hole. I've seen guys on tour now. One of my students, Ken Duke, put the ball off the green from 15 feet with a 2-shot lead, and then made seven. That's how I'm a little concerned about the speed of the green. I think there's. The players now, if you look at their stroke, they're just hardly tapping the ball. They're just trying to touch it to get it started. When we played with the greens were nine, you had more follow-through because you had more speed through impact to get the ball to roll to the hole. So I'm watching the strokes today, and they've changed because of the speed of the green.
So
Amazing.
basically, Bob Toski, you're saying
But when you get fast greens like that,
okay. You're saying that basically, the
go ahead.
shape of the greens and the speed of the greens are causing them, more difficulty than it did 20 years ago, and therefore they're not making the percentage of putts at various distances that they used to be able to make. Is that what I'm hearing?
Without a doubt,
And the speed of the
the
greens.
breaks, the contours, and the breaks, and the speed of the grain. If you're putting down grain or slightly downhill, you've got the. I've always told my students. I told Ken Duke, who's one of my students and a great guy, if you got a green that's about 13, if you're putting slightly down grain, don't putt at the hole. Putt at another hole about 4 feet short of that hole. because the putt's going to run faster and get to the point where you may not think it would.
Yeah.
Because if you putt at the hole and miss it, your ball might run off the green. So
Are
you got to see another hole which is shorter than the hole you're looking at.
you're listening to the famed golf coach, PGA Tour winner, senior PGA Champions Tour winner, a legend of the game at nearly 100, Bob Toski. Bob, let's go to the speed of the greens and slow play. Everybody complains about slow play. Everybody, including the players that cause slow play. They complain about it too, but they're causing it. I paid my money. I'm going to get my day's worth of golf. Oh, I don't care if I have to go into the bushes and find that ball that costs $3. I'm going in there for 10 minutes and I'm going to find me a ball. Or whatever it is that golfers do because they have all this ego about themselves. That said, golf has a slow play problem. Is it the speed of the greens that adds to it, though? Because golfers can't handle that speed of greens.
Not only the speed of the greens, the location of what's happened to the side of the green. Water. When we played, there were very few water hazards. Look at the water hazards that you see today that intimidate the players to try to find a shot that'll put the ball on a green near the flag stick.
Yeah.
And water has become another detriment to the thinking of the player, because they once you put it in the water, it's a penalty. And the other part is a caddy. The caddies spend too much time talking to the players like they know more about the game than the player does. And I get a kick out of watching that. When we played, we had caddies that were taken out of the pro shop. The pro would give us a caddy, and all we did was try to get the yardages. And that was the end of the conversation.
Well, like anything, Bob, the professional tour caddy position has grown over the decades, and
Yeah, but
it has become something that, of course, in your day, it wasn't that. And
right. How much money are they making?
well, some of them are making millions because their players
Million
are.
dollars. Some of them make $1 million a year.
Some of them do, or more. If you look
Or
at
they make.
Scotty, yeah, they get 10%. Scotty Scheffler won what, Dr. Bob, 24 or $5 million. So his caddy
Right.
made $2.5 million. Okay. But that's one or two here and there. For the most part, the rank and file caddies make a living. They pay their travel expenses, but you're right, they do factor in. I mean, they're the psychologist, they are the friend, they are the statistician. I mean, they know every inch of every blade of grass. And I don't know, is it too much information for the tour players? Shouldn't they just go?
Paralysis, paralysis from
There we
overanalysis.
go. All right.
You don't need that all that information. You should know the distance that you're going to hit the shot. You should know the club that you're going to use. You should know the type of shot that you're going to play. Put the club down behind the ball, take your stance, and strike the ball and play golf.
Who was the great, great ball striker that you played with? Maybe the greatest ball striker that you played with. Who would you go out and say in history, the greatest ball striker I ever played with? Now, I know there was an article done, or actually, I think a book done about Billy Casper. And I knew Billy Casper. He was on my television and radio. I would call Billy at home. One of the most wonderful people I ever met. But who is the greatest shot maker you ever saw?
Did you ever hear a guy named Byron Nelson?
Oh, yeah.
How many tournaments did he win
Well,
in 1 year?
he won 11 in a row, and then I think he went on to win what that year, 14 or something? Go ahead.
Eight,
18?
eight, 18
Or
that
18.
year.
18.
Yeah.
Okay. Go ahead.
Now, how do you become, how do you win that many tournaments if you're not a great ball striker?
You don't.
You've got to do everything right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
You got a minute that you got a minute that I can tell you a story about Byron Nelson?
We have a minute.
All right. I played a practice round with Byron, and this was when he was retiring at the Crosby tournament, and we're at Cypress Point. Now he's going to practice. He said, "Bob, would you come out and watch me practice?" I said, "Sure." He couldn't. The driving range was so bad that the pro said you can strike off the side of the first tee, but and we had caddies. The caddy would go down the fairway. So Byron's hitting golf shots, and I finally said to him, "Byron, would you do me a favor?" He said, "What?" I said, "Take a driver out," which was a 9.5 degree driver, "and strike golf balls off the turf, no tee, and let me call the shots." I said, "Hit me a low fade, medium fade, high fade, low draw, medium draw." And then I said, "High draw," and he stopped. And he said, "Bob, that's the hardest shot to hit with a driver with a face roll and control the ball in the air and hit it as high as you want it." And he hit this high draw, and I said, "Byron, what a great shot." And he looked at me and he said, "Wasn't high enough." Now, here's a guy that put on an exhibition for me with a driver, and he called every shot. He played every shot I called. And when I finally said, "Hit me a straight one," he putted it. And he said, "That's straight enough." And I said, "Well, don't pull my leg, put the ball in the air." He hit a straight roll ball, hit a straight medium ball, and a straight high ball. Now, I want to tell you, the ball control that he had with the driver off the turf, no tee, I defy anybody to be able to do what he did. So,
right.
You want to talk about great ball strikers? Byron Nelson was my man.
Wow. Now, what about today? Who's the greatest ball striker in your opinion today? Who do you like today out there?
Well, of course, he had Tiger Woods. Because this guy, he hit the golf shots. A lot of people, sometimes he didn't believe. But he's lucky to be alive, as you know, what he's gone through. But Casper was, I played a lot of golf with Casper. He was a great ball striker, but he wasn't in Nelson's company. But what he could do is putt. He's one of the greatest putters that ever lived.
Yeah.
When he won at Wingfoot, I think he broke the putting record to win the tournament.
Yeah, Billy Casper gave my television crew and me 13 different putting lessons, and we filmed them at Desert Mountain Golf Club in North Scottsdale. So 13 of those on camera from Billy Casper, putting lessons. We're going to go out to a quick break. Bob Toski, can you please don't move. Maybe get a sip of water, maybe get a sip of water or a Coca-Cola, whatever you want. We're going to go to a break and we're going to come back in just a moment, folks, with Dr. Bob Denny, PGA historian emeritus from the PGA of America, as well as Bob Toski, a living legend and one of the great, great golf coaches in, well, golf history. Over the years, we're going to talk about his coaching. We're going to ask him about the golf ball today and what he thinks about the ball. And we have already talked about a lot of things, from the speed of the greens to the pace of play and to living and eating right, so that you can be a 99 and a half like Bob Toski.
You don't want me to start with the gutta perch ball, do you?
Well, you don't have to start. Well, you don't have to start with the gutta perch ball, but we're going to ask you about the ball that you played with. But then I want your opinion about the ball today and what's going on with the manufacturers and the distance these balls are flying and what have you. So we're going to do all of that with Bob Toski. Well, we've got the twin Bobs on today, Bob Denny and Bob Toski. We'll be back with both the Bobs and with you in just a moment. Stay with me. These messages coming to you are very helpful. Listen to them, and we've got a lot more to come on this.
I'll be right back.
This show. We'll be back.
Introducing the revolutionary T-Clip, a 4-in-1 magnetic T-holder, an alignment tool, a divot repair tool, and a ball marker. It's handcrafted to provide effortless access to your golf tees, all without digging in your pockets. Visit our website, theteeclip.com, to experience the difference and order yours now. Straight Line Golf brings you the club alignment system that will change the way you play golf while reducing your strokes on the course. How many times have you bought a golf fade that fell short of success? Our system is changing the way golf is played, whether novice or professional. Our patented club alignment system is a visual aid comprised of decals attached to your club shaft and can be left on the shaft while you play. This USGA permitted system will help with great repeatable shots for great alignment and swing. Visit StraightLine.golf for more details.
Legacy Golf Resort in Phoenix. Experience the thrill of our championship golf course. Dine in the full-service restaurant at the Trails End Bar and Grill. Our Golf Performance Center is equipped with cutting-edge technology, helping you refine your game and unlock your full potential. We're not just a golf destination. We're also the perfect backdrop for your dream wedding at our gorgeous award-winning Sierra Vista venue. Whether it's a birdie on the course or the perfect I do under the desert sun, Legacy Golf Resort creates memories that last a lifetime.
All right, everybody, welcome back to Great American Golf. Ray Adams here with you with Dr. Bob Denny, our PGA historian, as well as Bob Toski will be joining us again in just a moment. He took a little break and he is going to be coming back. So while we're waiting for Bob Toski to return, Bob Denny, what's happening at the Cognizant?
Well, we're keeping cognizant of what's going on across the mile and a half away from us here in Palm Beach Gardens. And it was unique to see that we've had some pretty amazing scores out there, because there wasn't a rain, preferred lies, as we've come to call those, a lift king in place. So that didn't happen. And a guy by the name of Nico Echevarria is an 8-under, and Mr. Smotherman, who many people may know much about him, but he is Austin Smotherman, and he fired a little 62 yesterday. Which is pretty amazing. Mm-hmm. So to start out, so we're seeing those that are trying to use this as a second chapter, Ray, to get a chance to a boost to their careers, because frankly, we know that the only have several in the top 50 are in the tournament. It's sandwiched between the signature events, but right now it's Nico Echevarria and Austin Smotherman at the top of the leaderboard. Mm-hmm. People that, and further down the list, people we wouldn't recognize, but one guy we really like to see locally do well is Daniel Berger, and he's right now tied for ninth going into the weekend.
Well, we do like Daniel Berger there, but none of the top 25 are in this golf tournament, and that does not bode well for the PGA Tour events like this. This is the formerly known Honda Classic. Honda left. They didn't feel like, I guess, they were feeling the love. After many, many years, Honda left as sponsor. Now it's the Cognizant. And we are certainly very cognizant of the missing in action of the world's top 25 on that leaderboard. They're just not there. And there's a reason why they're not there. You said it. And that's because this tournament is sandwiched between big, big events that they're holding back for. And I want to get Bob Toski, who has rejoined our broadcast, everybody. The wonderful Bob Toski is back with us. Bob, we're talking about this Cognizant Classic going on in Florida this weekend and this week. And we're talking about, well, multiple tournaments on the PGA Tour are not having their sponsor, their big title sponsors, renew. And this is a big transition tour. So what do you make of what's going on with the new leadership? And the tour schedule. Go ahead.
How do you control the players to be able to play in tournaments that are important to make a field strong? You got Brooks Koepka playing this week. What he shoot? He's not ranked in the first 25, but look, he won four majors. He's a hell of a player.
Well, he is an amazing player, and he came back to the PGA Tour from LIV Golf. And while we're talking about Brooks Koepka, what about LIV Golf? What was and is your opinion about LIV Golf and when it burst onto the scene 4 years ago or whenever now? And
I got an answer for you there.
I'm
only in America.
Only in America.
Only in America. That's what we owe the game of golf to, the PGA of America, not the LIV people.
All right, so we.
They're doing that to try to create some recognition as a decent country. They're paying these guys all this kind of money to play. And look, I'm not crying spilt milk, but these guys are overpaying.
Well, they may very well be. You're listening to Bob Toski, the legendary golf
The
coach.
kind of
We have
money
lots.
they're getting is unbelievable.
It is. Bob, I think
Mr.
you had a
We were
question.
underpaid, but we didn't care. We had fun. We had a fraternity. We went there and laughed and played golf. And
Well, I did have a
besides,
listener write to us during the break.
I didn't like the LIV tour because I didn't think the
Go ahead. Bob
I'm
Toski,
sorry.
Mr. Toski, we did have a
The
we did.
LIV tour was I'm sorry, can you hear me?
Yeah, we hear you. Go ahead. What about the LIV
Do we
tour?
have a break?
No, go ahead. Go
Well,
ahead.
it's another country, and it's all about money, and they were giving upfront money that you can't believe, you know that.
Oh, yeah.
And that's why they left America to go there. Of course, now to pay a real fine to come back to play too.
Okay.
Right? Pay left.
Bob,
That's my mind.
one of our listeners wrote to me during the break, and they wanted you to talk a little bit more about your life out on the tour when you said that you had gone broke twice out there. And even though in 1953 you won a tournament, and in 1954, I believe you won four tournaments
Four.
that year. You won four of them. And they want to know why you did not play in the next Ryder Cup. What happened with the Ryder Cup?
Oh, that guy's looking for trouble.
Is there a is there a is
I
there a
like
story there,
to
Bob? Is there a story there about the 1955 Ryder Cup?
I was Ryder Cup. I had, I'm sorry, I was a leading Ryder Cup. I had more Ryder Cup points than anybody that year. And I went on the exhibition tour. And I got me to sign this letter if I was going to play on the Ryder Cup. I signed the letter, put it in my briefcase, forgot to mail it. I got a call from Harry Moffitt. He said, "You're not going to play on the Ryder Cup because you didn't answer my letter." I said, "Well, you could have called me and reminded me of the fact that I overlooked that." What they did was blackball me because I didn't play in the PGA Championship. And
Oh.
at that time, I was a number one player on the tour. And because I didn't play in the PGA Championship, there was no reason why they should. Oh, in fact, the players that were on the Ryder Cup team said, "If you don't put Bob back on the team, we'll all not play." They said, "We'll get another team."
Really?
Yeah,
Oh my.
really. This
Okay.
is.
Well, that's terrible.
Well, now the guy knows why I didn't play in the Ryder Cup.
Okay.
Only
I didn't know
because of
why.
it,
I
only
did not
because
know
of
that.
a technicality over a letter. If
Yeah.
I'm the president of the PGA and the guy has overlooked the letter, which is not as important as him calling me and them saying, "Do you want to play on the right?" Well, it's obvious I wanted to play. I had more points than anybody.
Yeah, right.
But
Yeah.
this was a vendetta.
Bob Denny, hold on 1 minute. I'm getting listeners now that are pouring in questions. Here's one that's relevant to this talk. What about the Ryder Cup that we recently had in New York? One of the listeners wants your take on that Ryder Cup. Now, I was in Rome 2 years ago, and I covered that Ryder Cup in Rome. And then I also was in New York at Bethpage, and I covered the Ryder Cup a few months ago there. What's your take on what happened at the Ryder Cup at Bethpage Black in New York this past few months ago?
If you know, you know. If you know New York and the people in New York, they're tough. They want winners.
Well, why?
Huh?
Why are they any different about the Ryder Cup and being rude than you would be if you were in, you know, San Diego or Boston or Minnesota or Wisconsin? I mean, why were they so rude?
That's the nature of their personality. It's the nature of the personality.
Well, but then their personalities are warped to be rude.
I would never have the Ryder Cup in New York if I was. I would have it where you had it in Italy.
Italy?
Is that where you had it?
We had it in Rome. Spain? Correct, in Rome in 2 years ago, yeah.
What was the gallery like there?
They were very nice, although the European crowd, I must say, they are the 15th club in the bag. They are
there
the extra man.
There you go.
They're very much root for their team, but I did not really hear. Were there a few that were a bit raucous here and there? Oh, yeah. But for the most part, they were fun-loving and rooting for their European team, for the most part.
I've always said this as a teacher to my student. Never allow your emotional factor to interfere with your ability to rationalize and think clearly.
Okay, let's talk about your students. Bob, I want to ask Mr. Toski, how did you transition from playing on the tour, winning on the tour, and move into teaching and becoming one of the great, great names as a golf teacher? How did that transition occur, Mr. Toski?
You know, I had been married, had three children, and I decided that I wasn't going to play on the tour anymore. I was going to go home, be a good father, and be a good husband, and help my wife raise three young boys that she said I should have built a teepee for.
Well, we were three boys too, and my little mom, 5 foot one. And,
if you can,
yeah, we were three boys. We know.
So I took up teaching, and it was the love I had because all my brothers were teachers. I had three brothers that were all golf pros, and I was the youngest of the four. And as much as I love to play golf, I love to teach. And one thing I learned about teaching, I learned that I was a better person because now I'm giving instead of receiving. I'm giving knowledge and experience to people that want to play better and want to become better golfers. And I think my communication system, my knowledge of the golf swing, and how to communicate the swing to different people, the different sizes, different ages, that was natural for me. And I became the youngest person to be on the Golf Digest panel. It was very simple for me. I just love to teach. You got to want to help people. But the one thing I learned in teaching that a lot of people don't know, from the 20 years that I had with Golf Digest, 20 years I taught all over the world, the one thing I learned is that 90% of my students had poor hand-eye coordination. Now, when you're working with someone with poor hand-eye coordination, you better have a pretty good idea of how you're going to help them to become more proficient at finding the ball and putting the ball somewhere in the fairway.
Okay, if you have poor hand-eye coordination, you're not going to be very good at most sports. Certainly not racket sports at all. Racquetball, pickleball, tennis. Badminton, ping pong, I mean, this is all hand-eye coordination. And well, we just watched the Olympics for 2 weeks, and there's a lot of hand-eye coordination out in the Olympics as well. But if you are not great with hand-eye coordination, what was your teaching philosophy? What did you do, Mr. Toski? Give us a lesson. Tell the folks, the recreational golfers out there today.
You got poor hand-eye coordination, right? The game of golf is played in the air and on the what? On the ground?
Yep.
If you can't find a ball in the air, where should you go? You go out on the putting green, and I'll give them a 7 foot, 8 foot, 10 foot putt straight, and let me see you aim the club and roll the ball in the hole. Mm-hmm. And if they can't aim the putter and then strike the ball in the hole, to roll the ball, what's going to happen when they try to strike the ball and put it in the air? They got two chances, soon and none. So there's a process of learning, and it all comes to the hands. The hands, I come up with this phrase, into thine hands you place the truth of thy swing.
Mm-hmm. Bob, and I have one question for you.
Train the hands, which is an important part of your body, for feel. Feel. I weighed 118. Mm-hmm. What's that?
A feel. The hands and the feel, you're Hello? Saying, is so important. Bob,
yes,
are you with us?
Yep. The touch and the feel.
Yep.
Okay.
All right, yes. Bob, Danny, go ahead, Bob. Danny.
And,
okay.
It starts from your hand. Bob, you got a question?
Yeah, I wanted to go back to an interview you had with Guy Yoakam in Golf Digest back in 2008. And one of the comments you, of many then there, it was called My Shot. That was the column that he wrote. You said, it's better to play than to practice. Could you first comment on that one? That was one of your comments.
Oh, yes. Have you heard of a name, Birdie Kim? Can you recognize the name Birdie Kim?
Yes.
She
won her only tournament, and she was my student. And her only tournament she won was a major.
Uh-huh.
Now, we're down in my teaching center, and she had such a perfect golf swing in my mind. She was a 10. She was strong. She had a great body for golf. And her golf swing was repeatable and solid. So I was testing her on the driving range, and there was 150 yards. There was a telephone pole, 150 yards. And I took a 6-iron out, and I said, I'm going to try to hit that pole, telephone pole, with three balls. And on the second ball, my ball hits the telephone pole.
Unbelievable.
I said to her, it's your turn now. Let's see what she hit the telephone pole on the first ball.
Unbelievable.
And I said, we're not going to practice anymore. We're going
we don't
to the
need
golf
to practice.
Course. I'm going to teach you how to play golf and score.
That reminds me.
We spent all the time.
You spent all the time helping her
you
on the,
learn
on
how
the
to
golf
score.
Course.
You can't do that on the You can't do that on a practice team. You've got to go out and play golf.
You've got to go play the game to learn how to score.
You've got to learn to play different holes, play different shots. And that's what made her champion. I played with her, and I said, you can't beat me. I'm an old man. And that would upset her. And I beat her. And finally, I decided, I'll tell you what I'll do. If you beat me, I'll give you $10. It didn't take long for her to start shooting lower score. Believe me.
I remember putting a dollar bill down on the putting green and having and having a putting contest with my little boy, who I was teaching golf to, Coleman. And he wore his Tam also, by the way. He wore the same hat that you're wearing. And I would put a dollar down there. And, in a short period of time, That young boy was making putts that I couldn't believe. And then it ended up being later on, well, later on as a teenager, it was a $10 bill on the putting green. You know, it went from one to five to 10. And after 10, after he beat me at $10 bills, I said, I can't take any more. No more wagering with you. You're too good of a putter. So what great advice from Bob
Is
Cosby
money
is to get out and
is
play.
Money a motivator?
Of course it is.
Is money a motivator?
Well, and I think
you
the
and
will
I know
to
that
win,
well.
it is. And but I also think the will to win, to be the best, to, you know, maybe a little boy who could beat his dad, was a big motivator.
Do you know why I finally won on a tour?
Why?
Because I hated to lose.
Uh-huh.
I hated to lose more than I wanted to win.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I said, I've had enough of this.
Bob Denny, go ahead.
There's one thing we know, Bob. We've seen a lot of different injuries of backs over the years, and I want to go back to what you said in that column with Guy Yoakam. You said, if your back hurts from playing golf, you're not swinging correctly. If you shift your weight to the left on the downswing and let your right heel come off the ground, you should be able to play forever.
Takes pressure all off your right side of your body, if you kept your heel down, right heel down, while you made a striking action through the ball, you're going to put so much pressure on your lower lumbar region, you're going to start tearing those muscles. And so weight must move to support motion. You can see it in any sport. Baseball, what does the player do? Steps into the ball.
Yep.
Right?
Yep.
Yeah.
A kicker kicking a your feet and your legs are as important as your hands and arm, because we allow traction and not controlled action, you're going to have a fraction.
Okay.
What about Scottie Scheffler coming out of his shoes on his swing? What about that?
I'm not impressed with his golf swing, but this guy knows that. This guy knows how to get the ball in the hole.
He knows how to score.
He's so strong.
Yeah.
Isn't that what you get paid for?
They're asking
you don't
me, Mister.
You don't get paid for style.
You don't get paid for style. Yeah. Just ask Jim Furyk about that one. His swing has always been a bit odd. And yeah.
I remember asking Jim Furyk when I met him up at the PGA tournament. I said, how'd you learn to play golf? He said, my father taught me. I said, how good a player was your father? He said he was fair. So his father was teaching him what he knew, but he didn't know enough about the fundamentals of a good golf swing to teach his son. So that's why he developed that type of swing. But
He did well with it, and now I understand. That Jim Furyk is, did you read recently, Bob Denny, where Jim Furyk is going to go to the broadcast booth, I think.
Yeah, he's going to be in the Golf Channel analyst.
He's going to start being a...
He'll do well.
They're asking me, Mr. Toski, the folks that are listening to us are asking me, are you still teaching? Where are you teaching? And can somebody pay whatever amount of money it costs to get a lesson with you? What about it?
Well, I don't teach anymore, per se.
No more.
My body is not strong enough to stand or swing. And I've got to conserve all the energy I have. But people come to my house and sit and talk. And I spend time with people. Come to my house
and talk
to golf swing and give them an idea.
So people come to your house. People will come to your house, and then you can look at their swing and give them some ideas. But you just can't have any person decide to show up at your house. How you talk about tour players come to your house, or who comes
stop
there?
Holding her body in a standard that was set by men who are attracted to teenagers. Hot take, and I don't care what pissed off. I don't need every woman
I'm getting your feedback.
Hang on just a moment. Somebody's talking. Okay, so I'm presuming that very, very special people can come to your house, and I think you live down in Florida, don't you?
Well,
where
I
do
don't
you live?
I don't charge them for it. I just sit and talk.
Well, but you
I'm
can't just have
my knowledge.
But you just can't have anybody show up at your front door, Mr. Toski.
No, they call me. They have to call me.
Oh, we're going to call you now.
Listen.
Well,
and they'll call me on the phone.
Where do you live? Where do you live, Mr. Toski?
I live in Boca Raton.
You live in Boca? I've been to Boca. They have great orange juice in Boca Raton.
Where have you been all my life? Why don't you call me and I'll take you to Arturo's where I sing on a Friday?
Unbelievable. An invite to go to Arturo's and get a lesson from Bob Toski? You're on, Mr. Toski. You're on, sir. You're on. Bob Denny, go ahead. We've got to ask him about the ball. We've got to get to the ball, but go ahead, Bob Denny. Because
let's go right straight into his view on today's golf ball.
Yeah, what about the ball today?
What did Nicholas say about the golf ball?
He said, slow it down.
Why is the ball going so far?
The manufacturers are making it to where the ball is made in such a way to where it flies farther.
Well, the compression of the ball.
Yeah.
But it takes mass velocity times squared. Does the mass of the club change? Does the weight of the golf club change? Does the weight of the body change? It all depends on how the body can create speed at to and past the point of impact.
Yeah.
And the faster the club head travels through that ball and compresses it, the ball's going to go further.
Well, especially
when I played on tour, I had my ball speed, my club head speed is a little over 100 miles an hour for my size. Now, what's the club head speed with the tour players? 100 and what?
That's 20, in 140s huh? And 130s and 140s, yeah.
Well, that's why the ball is compressed and going so far. That ball is being compressed like an egg.
Do you think it finally
reaches its position? Speed, weight, and speed is the name of the game.
Do you think
the
ball
club and the speed of?
Go ahead.
I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
The players are stronger. They're stronger and bigger. They're taller. They got more leverage. When we played on tour, the average height was 5'10", 160 pounds. The average tour player today is over 6 foot tall, weighs over 200 pounds.
Mm-hmm.
He's got all that leverage, and he's got all that strength and some 8 feet high in the air to bring it back down to the golf ball at the base of your feet. And then they can compress the ball with that golf club and I'll say this. They have a lot of airmail, but no zip code.
Uh-huh. Well, there
what,
you go.
What happens? What happens with speed is you can't get phase control as well as you can because of timing. That's my point.
Do you think, Mr. Toski, that the governing bodies of golf – from the PGA of America to the tour to the RNA, the USGA, do you think that what they're doing now, they're looking at dialing back the ball? They're looking at reducing the distance that the ball flies. Do you agree with those governing bodies or not?
Well, let me ask you this question. When you were a kid and you went out to a ball game, what did you tell your father you wanted to see? A home run or a single?
No, I wanted to see. I wanted to see him hit it as far as they could. Yeah,
home run.
Don't the people want to go out and see how far these guys drive the golf ball?
They do.
They can't believe how far they can accelerate the club and drive the golf ball.
Well, right. even amateurs are driving the ball a lot farther these days, though, because of the ball.
Because they also got you got if you don't have any club head speed and impact, how far the ball gonna go?
Well, yeah, yeah.
If your club head speed 50 miles an hour compared to 120, how far is the ball gonna go?
So we ought to leave the ball alone and let them build the ball and build the clubs and use the technology.
Well,
and
you'd have to change you'd have to make the golf course harder. Jack Nicklaus's bear course, mm-hmm. that was supposed to be a hard golf course when he constructed it. The guy shot 62 the other day.
He shot 62 on the bear. Yeah. Well, and Jack Nicklaus told
you're
me.
You're going to have to find a way to.
Well, Jack Nicklaus told me that we're running out of real estate and that you just cannot afford to keep golf courses getting longer and longer. It's not sustainable, is what Nicklaus said.
That's exactly right. You'd have to build 8,000, 9,000 yard golf courses.
Yeah. All right. Yes. We're going to come down to a final question for Mr. Toski. Bob, I'm going to give you a final question and then I have and then I'm going to close it out. Mr. Mm-hmm. Toski, I just can't believe how gracious you've been with your time. Will you promise me if I beg and plead to come back on the show with us sometime soon?
I'd be happy. Look,
we look forward to
I have
to
a
that.
Lot of knowledge. I have a lot of experience.
We know, we want to get...
I'm the only person alive that can talk and make any sense right now.
Well, that's about right. Okay, Bob Denny, go ahead.
Bob, one of the great things that I, in my life, have been able to do is rub shoulders with special people. And one of the special people I rubbed shoulders with was Jack Burke Jr. And Jack Burke left me with one thing, left me with a lot of different things when I talked to him. And one of the things was how joyful it was for him to see people love the game. And he also said this about giving back to other people. And I got to think that you have something in your life that might have been the same way. He said, live a life that when you pass away, you fill up the church. That means you've left an impact in life with other people. And I got to feel that you have the same way when you think about those you've touched with and those that you've given joy to.
You can't give back enough what you've received.
Yeah,
I've got things in my life I'd never believe I would ever have. I came from a family of 9 children. We had an outhouse. We didn't even have a bathroom.
Unbelievable.
And I got a home here now. It's worth $2 or $3 million. I would never believe I could have had that. I got a lot of friends. I still talk and teach golf, whether it's in the bathroom or bedroom or whatever. knowledge is to be shared.
All right, Mr. Toski, how do the folks learn from you today? Yes, we have this wonderful classic radio show now, and we've recorded it, and it's going to be available out there on all the platforms, and it will stay there forever so people can hear you talk about the game and your life and your advice. But how else can people find out more about you? How can they read? Do you have a favorite book that you've authored? I mean, there are videos, I'm presuming, out there.
The book that I would suggest that they would try to buy is The Elegant Mouse.
It's called what?
The title is it called The Elegant Mouse. It's written by Brian Begain.
The Elegant
and,
Mouse.
Right. The Elegant Mouse. It's all about this. Of course, they call me the mouse because I move fast. They couldn't find me.
Yeah.
That's why Sam called me. He says, "Guys, where the hell are you, Bob? I saw you a minute ago. You're gone."
Yeah. Well, The Elegant Mouse is the book. Now, are there videos out there that people can watch you teaching or give a lesson? Are there videos from a few years ago that are available?
They should call Golf Digest.
Go call Golf Digest. Contact Golf Digest or write to Golf Digest and find out. Okay, very good. Listen, Mr. Toski, we've gone commercial free during this show. I have not mentioned any of my sponsors, and I do want to thank some of my sponsors. I'm going to do that now. I know that you have given us an hour of your time.
Yeah,
and you to have Mr. Toski back on in the future. Bob Denny, you did a great job of getting in touch with Scott Toski, the son. Thanks, Scott, for arranging all of this and making it happen. And
that was a big help.
I'm going to take you up on giving you a call now the next time I'm in Boca Raton, Florida, and maybe I can get a lesson.
I'll be waiting.
Well, I can't
I'll be
wait.
Waiting. I'll give you a lesson.
Yeah. Well, Bob,
I'll give you
Bob
a lesson
Denny,
you won't even forget.
I want that lesson. I need that. Believe me, I need it. Bob Denny, Boca.
That's just the great. He's the greatest. One of the greatest PGA members that we've ever had, and we're so blessed to have him.
Yeah. You know, the question came in during our conversation about the PGA of America. And of course, I've been a big PGA of America fan. I've promoted the PGA of America. I've been for all of the various things they do to bring more people to the game, to help their members, the PGA members. We have a lifetime member of the PGA of America that joins us on this show constantly. He's off working today, Mr. Craig Renshaw. And I have been over the years able to have many of the different PGA of America officials on my shows with me. Is the PGA of America in a little bit of a transition right now? Where is the PGA of America right now? In your opinion, how are they doing? Final question.
Well, I think they had a challenge from the LIV Tour when they started losing all these players. Good players, right? Mm-hmm. Mickelson, all of them.
And I don't mean the tour, Mr. Toski. I mean the PGA of America, the organization.
Well, the PGA of America has 30,000 members?
31.
PGA
mm-hmm.
members. Then yep. you have, of course, the PGA Tour, which is separate from the PGA of America, right?
Yeah, yes. Right.
The PGA of America is club professionals. I was a club pro.
Yeah.
I was a golf director 6-7 times. I was both a teaching pro, a club pro. I was a golf director. I've had it all. And the one thing I've learned about stopping playing on tours, when I was a tour player, I only thought about one person. I was selfish, self-centered, driven to try to succeed because I was trying to beat 150 players. Now I'm teaching golf and sharing my knowledge with people to help them to become better.
Yeah.
And that helps me to become a better person.
There you
go.
Brilliant.
Of course, I'm not overpaid because everybody says I don't pay enough money, but I don't worry about the money. I've got enough money to be happy and healthy and whatever. It's friendship. It's people. It's enjoying the friendship of people that want to learn how to play the game of golf that I played and thought I'd never be what I was. But
I have 15 or 20 questions here. One person just wrote to me and asked me, please ask Mr. Toski who he enjoys talking to. Who calls him on the phone and makes him happy when they call him? That's a question. And I've got many, many others. So we definitely would like to have you on again in the future. Thank you so much. Stay healthy. We're going to eat right. We're going to give back, not just to the game, but to people. We're going to look above us and thank the good Lord above us. All this advice from you, try to work our way through stress and anxiety. These are all the things I've heard you say and talk about today.
Yes.
And get out and enjoy the game and play the game more than you practice it. Play it more than practice. That
exactly
was a big,
right.
That was a big lesson I learned from you.
Enjoy the friendship of your friends. Enjoy the beauty of Mother Nature and play golf and look and count your blessings.
Yep. There it is from Bob Toski, the great one. And
let's be like Bob.
We all want to be like Bob Toski. Isn't that wonderful?
You're on. I'm going to hold you on to that.
Well, we are going to call you. Don't worry. We will definitely be doing that. Thank you
God
so
you
much,
really.
Mr. Toski. God bless you. We will talk to you soon. Thank you so very much, Bob Denny. Dr. Bob, thank you so much.
Bob, and it's great to have you for an hour.
Thank you.
You guys are something.
Thank you very much.
Well, we love it. We love it, and we love the show. And again, we want to thank you and your wonderful son for setting all this up and for being with us today. We will be giving back and sharing our knowledge and sharing with other people and give back to other people. Some great advice from Bob Toski today. Many, many gems came out of this show. And everybody, I do want to thank Ashworth Golf Apparel. I'm certainly wearing my Ashworth Golf apparel as we do this show and everywhere I go. Ashworth Golf apparel, you want to go to Ashworth -golf.com. You want to get to Ashworth. If you're wearing Ashworth Golf apparel, folks, you're wearing a part of golf history. I want to thank Squares Golf Shoes, Squairz, at squares.com. They have many big things going on. You've got to get to their website at squares.com. And I also want to thank CertaFresh Cigar at CertaFreshCigar.com, one of the great companies supplying golf shops, over 3,000 of them all over the country, and other sorts of shops with fine quality cigars that are certified fresh for up to a year. The tubes can be logoed for your corporate or charity outing. And we want to thank CertaFresh Cigar, Squares Golf Shoes, Ashworth Golf Apparel, and we, of course, love Tour Edge Golf at touredge.com. Make sure you get to those websites, folks. And I've got a bunch more for you coming up. Enjoy golf over the weekend. Get out and play. A little practice, but a lot of play, Mr. Toski says. And
Yeah,
enjoy
it's been a
yourself.
lot of fun. It's been a lot of fun with you guys.
And have a lot of fun. And thank you, Mr. Toski. We had fun too, and we
Don't
learned a
stay
lot. All right, there he is.
Stay away too long.
Well, we're not. We're going to have you back on Great American Golf in no time. Thank you so very much. Stay healthy, please, and bless you. Bob Denny also, and all of you will be back on the Monday Golf Lifestyle Show day after tomorrow on the Monday Golf Lifestyle right here on Golf News Net, streaming and all the other platforms as well.
Amen.
Golf course superintendents are the unsung heroes of our great game. Due to the game's efforts, we now have turf that needs less water, courses that are more sustainable, with many now offering natural wildlife habitats. From the days of old Tom Morris, golf course superintendents have given golfers a reason to love this great game. But don't take my word for it. Jack Nicklaus agrees.
If you love golf like I do, thank a golf course superintendent.
A message from the Golf Course Superintendents Association of America and local superintendents everywhere.
Time when you buy and book online at DiscountTire.com. Did you know that Discount Tire now sells wiper blades? Stop by for a free air check or tire inspection and ask an associate about wiper blades today. And remember, if ever you're not satisfied with one of our tires, please feel free to bring it back. Thank you. Discount Tire.
Let's get you taken care of.